Oh boy, what a day to be talking hockey on this Friday, November the 20th, where it is 17 degrees Celsius outside. I feel like, you know, this is the time where spring's around the corner, we're gearing up for the postseason, but nope, in the middle of a pandemic and, you know, got to come up with a couple stories to kill some time until we get to the start of the regular season in January. Yeah, what a year 2020 has been. A couple news stories we're going to get to today, and I got a message from one of my buddies, Matt Hiscox, who talked about, you know, he said, you should talk about the LA Kings cap hit, and I looked further into it, and you know, I messaged him afterwards. I said, yeah, you know, it's not as bad as I thought, but it got me thinking, you know, I could do a lot with some of the team's cap hits and go over and dive into those situations and, you know, maybe bring to light some things that we weren't aware of. I'll get to that in just a little bit. I want to talk some news involving the Vancouver Canucks and the Ottawa Senators. It's actually a lot to get to today, so get ready. Let's go. As we work towards episode 25 of the Second Thoughts podcast, as always, I'm your host, Kyle Grimard. I can't believe we've actually made it 25 episodes. It's just kind of cool. I figured I would get to this point, but it's always cool every, like, 20th episode or 25 or we're going to get to 50. It's kind of like a little benchmark that you can knock off each and every time, so I think that's pretty spectacular. If you want to follow me along, at Second Thoughts P on Instagram and Twitter. You want to follow my personal account, at Kyle Grimard on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. If you've got a question that you want to ask the podcast, feel free to do so through our social media accounts at Second Thoughts P. Follow along as well if you're listening, whether it's on Spotify, Apple, and or Google Podcasts. There's also the platform called Anchor where everything gets distributed. And if you want to follow along with any of those streaming sites, feel free to do so. Also, just a reminder, I will be on Friday Nights, which is a talk show from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on 980 CFPL News in London, Ontario, with the voice of the OHL's London Knights, Mr. Mike Stubbs. We're going to be talking a few different stories around the National Hockey League and maybe a couple things that we'll actually get to here in the podcast. And, you know, some historic moves that were made around the league. One we'll get to right off the bat, some cap situations like I talked about, some travel issues, and then a couple other details that I want to touch on here on the show. So it's gonna be a good one, but we're gonna start with this here. You know, 2020 is the year of history. You know, it's going to be talked about in 30, 40, 50 years from now was the year that there was a global pandemic, the year that sports were shut down for a bit, the year that the Black Lives Matter movement became not just something that was talked about, but something that was taken action into. And something that happened earlier this year, the first woman ever to be named general manager of a major league sports team in the MLB, that was history in the making. And now, slowly but surely, the NHL is working towards that trend as the Florida Panthers made a historic hiring on Tuesday. This was right after I recorded Tuesday's episode, naming Brett Peterson assistant general manager of the Florida Panthers. And Peterson is to be the first NHL's black assistant GM, according to the club. There were quotes, so many different things to get to, but Peterson said himself to the NHL.com's William Douglas. He said, "It's exciting whenever you get the chance to kind of reignite a boyhood dream of chasing the Stanley Cup, being in the National Hockey League, and having the opportunity to be the first at something is even more exciting, something I never would have expected." This is groundbreaking. This is huge. This is historic. This is hopefully a stepping stone or the spark that ignites more moves like this. Because up until this point, I had no idea that there was never in the history of the National Hockey League before a general manager or an assistant general manager of color. That this was the first. I thought there would be at least one, maybe two, right? Like when the first player came and played in. You know, I know there's not a whole ton of players, but you're starting to see more and more of it now, of players of different nationalities and colors. And you know, you've got Ryan Reeves and Pierre-Marc Bellemare and Nazem Kadri and Wayne Simmonds. And then you had Anson Carter back in the day. And, you know, it kind of threw me off because I for sure thought that, okay, like that's pretty awesome. You know, it's, you know, a guy who's worked his way up and they went through all his accolades and, you know, he's more than he paid his dues. This isn't just a PR move. This is a guy who has, you know, been working his way up for some time now. But the first ever, as happy as I am, you know, I'm hoping that this is the spark that ignites more and more signings like this in the future. But Panther general manager Bill Zito, he said Tuesday that he's grateful to give Peterson the opportunity. He made the move to improve the team. Like I said, he said, if it means we're going to be expanding opportunities for people in hockey, I'm humbled. But this was a hockey hire. Hockey is such a great game. We need to make it more accessible. But this was a hockey hire. He said his substantive hockey experience as a player, significant developmental and evaluation skills, and business acumen as a negotiator combined to form an elite skill set that is very difficult to find in our sport. He said in a statement, he said, there are many who can excel in one of those disciplines, but very few who can excel in all three. Now, Peterson, who is just 39 years of age, he was actually the vice president of hockey for the Wasserman Media Group, a multi-sport marketing and talent management company. He'd been there since 2009. He's a certified NHL player agent as well. I mean, when you have a guy who has been a player agent, who's worked in a multi-marketing media company, and now you're going to bring him in as a general manager, like, this is a guy that knows all angles of the sport. On top of it being a former player, this is a... I love the statement that Bill Zito made. It's a hockey hire. He goes, I understand the history. I'm humbled by the fact that it's groundbreaking. I'm humbled by the fact that, you know, this is the first that's ever been done, hiring a general manager or an assistant GM who is black. But this is a hockey hire. We picked the best guy. Like, it didn't matter what nationalities you came from. It didn't matter what, your family history is like. It's, if you are qualified, if you have the skill set above that to be fitting for this job, we're going to hire you. And that's what the Panthers did. And that's why I love this move, because not just of the groundbreaking measures of it, but the fact that the way it was answered was, it doesn't matter if he was black, if he was white, if he was of European descent, if he was of Asian descent, it didn't matter. Like, we did this based on the hockey accolades alone and nothing else. And I'm a big fan of this. I'm still just blown away by the fact that this is the first, he is the first black assistant general manager in NHL history. A little bit of background on Peterson. He said he suited up for four seasons with Boston College as a defenseman from 2000 to 2004. He won a national championship in 2001. He played five seasons in the minors before transitioning to a player representative. He was born in Massachusetts and, just a guy, like I said earlier, been a player agent since 2009. He worked for a multi-sport marketing and talent management company. Clearly more than qualified for this position. And I like the fact that, you know, he has all of those skill sets. You know, he didn't just go to school for business. He didn't just go to school because he's good at numbers, or he didn't get hired because he was good at numbers. You know, he went because he's good with people. He's a player agent. He's played professional hockey before, and he worked for a multimedia corporation where he understands, you know, the business parts of it. He understands the personnel part of it. And, you know, that's a big move in history. So congratulations to Brett Peterson on being hired. Bravo to the Florida Panthers for saying, you know what, color means nothing at this situation. We're picking him based on his accolades. And hopefully this is a move that has a bit of a ripple effect down the line, and more of these hires are to come. So I want to get to this topic here. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to save those topics for the end. I'm going to talk about caps in just a little bit. I want to get some stories here. And this story was brought to me as well. And, you know, it is tough, and I can relate to the story as a goaltender, maybe not the injury side, but the goaltending side. As Senators goaltending coach says, that backup goaltender Anders Nielsen is still suffering from concussion symptoms after almost a year of experiencing the concussion. He said that he's still battling the symptoms, and his availability for the upcoming season may be in jeopardy as a result. Goaltending coach Pierre Grulot, I believe his last name is, said right now it's still status quo. He's got good days, he's got bad days. It's still a headache related and neck and eyes related, and we're gonna have to wait to see him in Ottawa and see how he is. When he was hurt, he was playing outstanding hockey. It's disappointing because Nielsen is such a great guy. I have known people who have suffered concussions before, maybe not to that extent, but I understand what you go through. You see it happen in the National Football League all the time with guys getting concussions and being out for multiple weeks. And, you know, those are injuries where, you know, if you break a leg, you break a leg. You're out 4 to 6 weeks. You get surgery, it recovers, you start rehabbing it, and then you're back to normal. right? If you tear your ACL, it sucks because you're out for the season, but you get the surgery, you work on it, you do rehab, you come back, and maybe you know, some guys come back stronger, some guys come back the same, some guys, you know, takes a little bit off their game, but you have a timetable for when you're better. Head injuries, concussions, man, you just don't know. You have absolutely no idea. Some guys recover in 5 days. Some guys take months, and some guys like Anders Nielsen are still experiencing concussion symptoms almost a year after it happened. That's tough. It's tough because I was a goaltender and I was lucky enough to not get injured when I played, whether I was a kid, whether I was playing junior. The worst injury I had was, it's going to sound bad, but it wasn't really that bad because it's something you can play on. But I partially torn my groin or hurt my groin to an extent where, you know, it's one of those injuries where there's nothing else I could have done to make it worse. It was, as long as I could tolerate the pain, I could play on it. And when you are playing junior hockey in a system that stresses three goaltenders, and at one point you're started and you're giving the starting job, if you get hurt, you no longer have the starting job. So I played through that, but you know, if you get a concussion, you know, you can't play through that unless you're fully healthy, especially with the concussion protocol. He suffered it back on December 16th, and then he didn't appear in a game for the rest of the season, obviously. Nielsen was projected to be the backup goaltender to the newly acquired Matt Murray. The Sens have some other options. I wanted to touch on this because it's so tough seeing a guy like this who suffered injuries so long ago. He came in and he was actually, you know, mainly their starter, or he was there for when Craig Anderson was kind of off his game. But, you know, at just 30 years of age, and you know, you get a concussion and you're still suffering it almost a year later. That's tough. And I'm slowly getting to 30. I'm 27 right now. It's tumbling. It's humbling and it's difficult to see that. But nevertheless, hopefully Anders Nielsen is able to make a recovery. Even if he never plays hockey again, it's a guy who, you know, you still want to be able to live the rest of your life. And at 30, you've got so much of your life left to live. Hopefully he'll be okay, and we get updates from him as time goes on. And then lastly here, before we get into the cap stories, this is the most 2020 story I think you could imagine. You know, there's that saying that slow and steady wins the race. Sometimes at U.S. Customs, it's slow and steady does not help you out at all. This past Wednesday, Vancouver Canucks goaltender Braden Holtby's wife, Brandy, asked her Twitter followers for some help related to her pet problems. Braden Holtby and his wife got stuck at the border trying to get to the Canadian government, but had to sign papers with Canadian customs because they didn't realize they needed to do so because they were bringing over their pet tortoises. She said that Braden himself can't get into Canada because they have to sign out paperwork, which they didn't need to do so with the American authorities. And oh my gosh. So I guess they're trying to make the move out right now to Vancouver. And, you know, they've been known, Braden and his wife, Brandy, have been known to be animal lovers. They've rescued trapped kittens before. They've shared their stories and personal accounts about that, about their affinity for animals. But it's the most 2020 story I've ever read in my life. Braden Holtby and his wife get stuck at the border because they had to get paperwork signed to bring over their pet tortoises from the United States. They filed papers with the Canadian government, but they didn't realize they had to do the same thing with the American government as well. So they just thought because they were leaving, they had to sign paperwork. But it's like when you're coming from a European country and you're on the plane and the flight attendants bring down pieces of paper, they do it going in and coming out. Like, you got to do it when you're going into a European country, and you've got to do it when you're coming back from a European country into Canada. And then the same thing, right? You sign paperwork when you're transferring over from Canada to the United States. You're flying from the United States to Canada. You sign out those papers to, you know, like, show, like, are you a Canadian citizen? Are you an American citizen? Are you bringing over this? Are you bringing over that? And I guess they checked off they're bringing over tortoises. And they got stopped, and now they got to deal with this whole process right now before they can make the move over to Vancouver. So I just thought that was a funny story and just the most 2020 story you could possibly imagine. And it comes out of the camp of Braden Holtby. But hopefully they figure it out soon and he can get to Vancouver safe and sound. Okay, so let's go with this. And I want to talk about this story because it's so hard now. I mean, those are the two stories I found. It's the Brett Peterson story out of Florida, Then there was the, you know, Braden Holtby story and Anders Nielsen. But other than that, like, there's not a whole lot of other stories going on. So I had a buddy of mine, Matt, reach out to me. He texted me and said, you should talk about LA's cap hit on the next episode of the podcast. And I said, oh, it's a good idea, man. I'll take a look at it. And, you know, he was explaining it to me and saying that their cap, you know, is going to be tough for the next few years because they've got guys who they are on buyout purposes. And there's a lot of money against the cap right now for players that aren't even playing on the team. And I looked at it. And while it's not great, and LA's got a very long ways to go before they can become competitive again, you know, it wasn't nearly as bad as some of the cap hits that I was anticipating going in. You know, they still got to pay some money. They got almost $4 million to give to Dion Phaneuf. They got about $900,000 to, remember Mike Richards? They're going to be paying him to like 2032 or something. But it's less than $1 million a year, and it's not the worst thing in the world. And so I was looking around and thought, okay, that's their cap hit, but I want to go look at the cap hit at some of the other teams around the league and just see where teams are at for the fun of it. Has anybody looked at Cap Friendly recently? Here's some stats for you. There are currently 9 National Hockey League teams. Now, right now, this is right now as of Cap Friendly. There still could be some roster moves as the, you know, time to the season starts to lead up. But there are 9 of a possible 32 teams in the National Hockey League. 9 of them have absolutely $0 in cap space. Like right on the mark zero. They don't even have like $100 to spare, like a couple hundred grand. Literally zero cap space. Those teams include the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Edmonton Oilers, Vancouver Canucks, the Washington Capitals. You know, and a lot of those teams, though, and this is kind of what I thought of. I understand that the cap's flat. I understand that, you know, times are tough right now and teams probably want to save a little bit of money because they're not making as much. But for some of these teams in times like these where you have a little bit of flexibility and you can flex your financial muscles because it's not going to affect you all that much, why not do it? Right, in a pandemic where teams are desperately shedding cap, like doing everything in their power to shed cap. You know, why not if you're a team that makes money like the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers and the Washington Capitals? Like, they're going to make money. They're competitive teams. 2 of them are in Canada. You know, Toronto's not, and they're not losing money anytime soon. Edmonton, you have 2 of the 5 best players in the world, and McDavid and Draisaitl. Like, your team is on the precipice. Washington, you've got, you know, the greatest goal scorer in the history of the NHL and Alex Ovechkin. You know, those teams are all very wealthy teams, can afford it to push the limits, where some teams, like, you know, it's crazy enough, but Jim Rutherford, GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, said, you know, they don't want to spend to the cap. It's a tougher year for them. Teams like Ottawa, who don't really want to spend to the cap, you know, they're going to struggle because they have cap room. They're not making as much money. So I understand why some teams are right to the cap. So 9 teams have $0 in cap space. 3 other teams, so 12 teams in total, have less than $1 million in cap space. And 18 teams have less than $3 million in a cap room. That is, I understand that as of this time, you're slowly getting your roster together and you're figuring out who's going to be on your team, who's not going to be on your team. So most teams have a little bit less money. But less than 18 teams have under $3 million in cap space to wiggle with. They can't all be competitive. Mind you, this past year, 24 teams got into the play-in for a chance to go to the playoffs. But that's wild. That's a lot of teams with not a lot of cap hits. And honestly, the expansion draft is coming. Seattle is going to prey on some franchises. Just prey on them. And like I said, Toronto, Edmonton, Washington, they're going to be fine, right? They want to spend. Toronto's going to make money. Edmonton's going to make money. They're not worried. One team, though, with zero cap space, that's absolutely screwed. And I feel bad because I kind of picked on them before. But the Arizona Coyotes have $0 in cap space. And this was earlier in the year. The general manager said, we need to trim some of the cap on this team because we can't pay it. in a pandemic where you are clearly not the most popular team in that city. Now, mind you, they also have a few exemptions. They're still paying Marian Hossa. He's still on their payroll right now. That's around $5 million. You've still got the buyout of a guy like Mikhail Grabowski, who you acquired in a trade. But other than that, they still have a couple roster spots they need to fill out. And they've only signed 43 of their 50 contracts. They've still got 7 contracts left to sign. That's a lot of, and I went through the list of players too, like Clayton Keller's over $7 million. Oliver Ekman-Larsson's $8.5 million. You know, Phil Kessel's over $6 million. There's a lot of just like good players making big money. Like Arizona tried to move Ekman-Larsson. I think Jacob Chikrin's making like $4.5 million. A lot of money. Derek Stefan's making like $6.125 million too. A lot of money is going to just good players. Some of them used to be great. Clayton Keller is still young. He might break out. But you're paying a lot of money to a guy who has yet to prove it. Derek Stefan, I get, like, at some point, you can never predict when a pandemic is going to hit. I get that. But that team is, I have absolutely no idea what Arizona's game plan is. They tried to trade Kemper. They tried to trade Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Right? They probably tried to move Kessel. They tried to bring Hall back. Like, the team's a mess. They're all over the place right now. That's a team to watch. LA's got like $13 million in cap space. Like, yes, they have players right now on their buyouts and they have guys on LTIR. But Arizona doesn't have any cap space. And they have roster spots to fill. And they don't have any money to do it. So the team's cap situations are only going to get more intriguing as we approach the start of the regular season. But yeah, 9 teams, zero cap space whatsoever. Some teams can afford it. Toronto, Edmonton, Washington. Some teams like Arizona, I don't know if they can. We're going to stick on the cap stories because I want to move over to this team and I want to talk about them a little bit more in depth. You know, you've always got room until you don't, right? When you're eating food, you know, you're always hungry. You could always keep eating until all of a sudden you can't. You know, you think you always have time. You know, you've always got time. You got time to get your girlfriend and a birthday present. You got time before you got to send your taxes in until you don't. The Colorado Avalanche, I've talked about significantly on this podcast before. And I've always talked about, they got so much cap space. They got cap. They can do so many things with their cap. They are all going to have cap. They're going to be fine for a bit. And, you know, they had a lot of cap until they didn't. After their free agency, after their trades, Colorado only has $1.8 million in cap space. And I made sure, too, when I looked at it, there's no one on the buyout purposes, and there's $0 in projected LTIR money. So no one who is currently on the roster is going to get tossed on a long-term IR and take some money off their cap. 1.8 is all they have left. This team went from having a plethora of room to having none in a hurry. Right, I'll go over it. They traded and signed Devon Taves to $4.1 million. Because I think they were at like $16 or $17 million before everything started. So let's go with that for a second. So they signed Devon Taves, $4.1 million. They re-signed Andre Burakovsky to $4.9 million. And then they traded for Brendan Saad for $5 million. Yes, you traded Nikita Zadorov in the process, but you got a guy back. So that didn't really do anything. So with Saad, Burakovsky, and Devon Taves, that's $14 million. They're sitting at $1.8 million now. This is all I'm going to say about Colorado. You better make a run this year. And they're poised to do so. We talked about it, that they're favorite to go on a deep run. But there's a difference between being favored and projected to do something and then doing it. They better go on a run next year. Because guess what? After next year, you got to pay Cale Makar. Oh, and Gabriel Landeskog. Oh, and Philip Grubauer. Three kind of big keys or big cogs in the system are all up. Now, they're all expected to garner at least a little bit more money. Who knows? They might let him go. Landeskog's making pretty decent money as it is. So if he does get paid, it's probably a little bit more. Maybe they move on from Grubauer, but he's only making like $3.3 million, so it's really not that much. But, you know, this is a similar situation that Toronto just had to go through. They had to get rid of Andreas Janssen. They had to get rid of Kasperi Kapanen. Why? Because they're luxuries to have on the third line. And you've got players like JT Compher, Jonas Dongskoi, Matt Calvert, all in that $3 to $4 million range. That's a lot of money to pay guys on their third and possibly fourth line. I think Donskoy was playing second line at some point, but if I go through the roster right now, I'm trying to find where Donskoy and Calvert and Compher would fit. And, you know, with the McKinnon, Rantanen and Landeskog line, and now you have Burakovsky with Kadri and Saad, or you switch, that's your top six right there. So those three guys I just said are all third line players. You're going to be fine this year. But all those guys are locked up past next year. And you've got some big dudes that you need to fill in. I will say this one thing, though. You've got a ton of youth in your... I'll say a couple things, actually. You've got a ton of youth in your back end. If you could try to move a guy like Eric Johnson and eat a little bit of his money, he makes like $6 million or so. So if you can eat a million or two and trade him off for something, make a little bit of wiggle room. You've got guys like Bowen Byram. Right, you've got a couple other defensemen in your system. Sam Girard is signed at a very reasonable $5 million. Devon Taves is locked up at 4.1. You know, like you've got some pieces set in stone. You're also only paying Nathan MacKinnon $6.3 million for three more years. That's the best contract I've ever seen in NHL history. The best contract I've ever seen. It was a gamble when he first signed it because I don't think he was exceeding more than 60, 65 points before he signed it. But man, did that deal pay off. MacKinnon wanted stability. Colorado wanted to lock him in for a long time. MacKinnon still made, I mean, you're making millions of dollars, but MacKinnon's like a $12, $13 million player. Like, he's that good. He's the second best player in the NHL. I've already had this discussion about people talking about, there were conversations of MacKinnon being the best player in hockey. And now, you know, talks are back of like, who's better, Austin Matthews or Nathan? It's Nathan MacKinnon. Well, Leon Draisaitl, it's Nathan MacKinnon. MacKinnon's a better player. I understand that Draisaitl this year played a lot more individually on his own. He wasn't playing with McDavid all the time, but he was playing parts of the season with McDavid. Plays in the power play with McDavid. You could put literally anyone with Nathan MacKinnon, he's putting up 95, 100 points. He's that good. Like, you do the eye test with MacKinnon, he's that good at hockey. So $6.3 million, you better win. You need to win with a guy who is a double-digit, 10-plus million-dollar player making 6-3. Like, that's a whole second, third liner you just saved in the money you're not paying to Nathan MacKinnon right now. So Colorado better win in the next couple of years, because after this year, things are only going to start getting more difficult. All that time when they had $10, $12, $13, $16 million in cap space, it's gone. Your window is now, Colorado. Your window is now to win. And you run it before you know it. You've always got time until you don't. Let's finish off the podcast with a couple news and notes around the National Hockey League. Some news out of the ECHL as the 6th North Division clubs are planning to suspend play for the 2020-2021 campaign. This was announced back on Wednesday. The Adirondack Thunder, the Brampton Beast, the Maine Mariners, the Newfoundland Growlers, the Reading Royals, and the Worcester Railers will each sit out the season due to the ECHL's COVID-19 policy. All 6 teams are scheduled to return for the following season in 2021-22, but all players of the North Division clubs are now free agents. This is as we continue to navigate the continuity and changing regulations across North America. We recognize the difficult nature of this decision, ECHL Commissioner Ryan Creeland said in a statement. He said, while some of our team's host cities have allowed upcoming plans to include fans, we unfortunately do not see the same path for these highly affected areas in the Northeast. So like I said, as we go over it, so the Adirondack Thunder are the ECHL club affiliate of the New Jersey Devils. The Brampton Beast are the ECHL affiliate of the Ottawa Senators. The Mariners are the ECHL affiliate of the New York Rangers. The Newfoundland Growlers are Toronto's affiliate. The Royals are Philadelphia's, and the Railers are part of the New York Islanders organization. Wednesday's decision leaves 18 ECHL teams set to play in the 2020-2021 season, so taking off another six. The Atlanta Gladiators, who are affiliated with the Boston Bruins, and the unaffiliated Norfolk Admirals previously opted out of the campaign. So that's eight teams in total from the 26 originally. Now we're down to 18. The ECHL is set to use a two-tiered system for the coming season. 13 teams will begin a 72-game schedule on December 11th. The other clubs will open a 62-game slate on January 15th. I don't know enough about the ECHL to know how that matches up in terms of some teams are only playing 72, some teams are only playing 62. Teams were allowed to back out, but you've canceled six other teams. It's only 18 teams that are set to play. I'm not 100% sure as to how that all works out and as to how it matches up, you know, points-wise or in the standings, but nevertheless, that's big news from the ECHL and really crazy news too, because there's a lot of players who are younger guys who are developing in the ECHL, or older guys who are trying to rejuvenate their career in the ECHL, who now are not going to get that opportunity, and they're now all free agents. So they can now sign with teams to like a one-year deal if they would like to continue playing hockey, or they can give it a test at a different level or go over to Europe. But that's it's a tough decision by the ECHL, and you know, we'll see what comes if more teams decide to opt out or not, or if this is set in stone, they're going to go ahead with it. But the ECHL is now down to 18 teams set to go for the 2020-2021 season. And then final news here from the Columbus Blue Jackets. General manager Jaro Kekäläinen believes that the club is going to be able to lock up blue chip pivot Pierre-Luc Dubois, before training camp begins, to an extension. He said, "I'm 100% sure we're going to get it done." He told NHL.com's Tom Galitti. He said, "We've been in this situation before where we've had RFAs that want to take their time and agree to a contract." He's like, "I totally understand, but I'm confident he'll be signed before training camp starts." We still don't know when camp's going to start, but the NHL is still targeting that January 1st date as an opening day. Pierre-Luc Dubois is just 22 years of age. He had 49 points in 70 games, kind of took it another notch as the team's playoffs kicked in, where he had 10 points over 10 playoff games. He's 6'3", he's compiled himself 158 points in just 234 games. He was the third overall selection, if you remember back in 2016, when that was the Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, Jesse Puljujärvi, and Columbus took Pierre-Luc Dubois over Puljujärvi, and everyone's freaking out about it, and it's looked like it's been an absolute steal of a deal. Columbus has about $9.22 million in projected cap space with no outstanding RFAs beyond Dubois. So that's the limit they got. Now, I can see Dubois with 49 points. He kind of upped his game in the playoffs. He's going to get a little bit of a bump, and I can see him making anywhere from, I'm going to throw a guess out here, but on the low end, somewhere in the sixes. Like if he signs like 6'2 or 6'4. I can see that. On the high end, probably low to mid sevens, like a 7'4", like a 7'2'5" or a 7'5". I cannot see him beyond that making more than $8 million, but especially with the flat cap and the way that the free agency market went as well, a lot of guys made a lot less money than I anticipated. So I'm just going to go with that. And plus two, you know, they only played 70 games. He had 50 points in a full 82 game season. He might have got 55, 60 points, maybe been close to 60, but you know, he turned it up. He had 10 points over 10 playoff games. He had some games where he was dominant as a center. He had games where he got dominated, and he's only 22 years of age. He's got some time. But yeah, I see anywhere in the low sixes to mid sevens for Pierre-Luc Dubois. So it'll be a fun game to see if I'm right moving forward, but general manager Jaromo Kekäläinen very confident that he can get him signed before the start of the 2021 season. If you have any questions or any topics that you would like me to discuss, feel free to send me a message over at Second Thoughts P on Instagram and Twitter. Follow along on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you do listen to your podcasts. Like I said earlier on too, I am on tonight, Friday nights, with the voice of the London Knights, Mike Stubbs, 980 CFPL News, to talk some NHL news and talk about the podcast a little bit. Big historic moves, and as you know, you go and listen to this, enjoy the weekend. We'll be back on Tuesday for another episode. We're getting closer and closer to December, which means our team breakdowns and evaluations are going to be starting soon. That is going to be a lot of fun. But until then, enjoy. That's a wrap.